The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
People ask me all the time, if you've listened to this show for any length of time, or if you're just listening for the first time today, one of the hallmarks of this show is that we interview people. We interview people that have something to say, at least we think so, and we interview experts in the field. I just don't get up here and do an infomercial on fixed indexed annuities, which I do not like. We don't use this show as a marketing piece either. We invite you to luncheons and dinners and things like that. But that's primarily to meet you and to enjoy some fellowship with you. But we do try to bring you people that we think are value to you as an investor. And the next gentleman is a good friend of mine. He and Tom Samuelson are two people that I listen to every single week. If you want to know who I listen to and who I follow, this man is the man I follow. I've got with me today Craig Columbus, Chief Market Strategist and Senior Managing Director for First Allied Securities. And we are pleased to have Craig on. Good morning, sir.
Hello there, my friend.
How are you? I'm fine, thank you. Well, I don't know where to get started here because, you know, the market has gotten very lethargic. It doesn't seem to be going anywhere, which I don't know if that's the summer doldrums or whether or not this thing is beginning to run out of steam. What do you think?
Well, I think the most interesting thing right now is stocks have been, as you say, kind of running in place. But let's be fair, we're 2% off of the all-time high on the S&P 500 we made earlier in the summer. But bond yields are making fresh lows. So it's a very rare condition where stocks and bonds are both rallying. In other words, bond prices are up and bond yields are down. And that they send you conflicting messages. That makes no intuitive sense, right? If stocks were rallying because there was a greater appetite for risk, because there was a better economic backdrop, for example, you would expect bond yields to rise, the price down and the bond yield to go up. But it's the exact opposite of that. And I think that's the thing we have to sort out. Why is that happening?
And why is it happening? I mean...
Oh, okay, so I teased you with that, right?
Yeah, I mean, why is it happening?
Okay, so I think in part because of what's been going on in Europe. Remember, these bonds are really sovereign bonds, government bond markets are very interconnected. We went into this year with the idea that bond yields were going to rise because the Fed was buying fewer bonds. They were tapering.
Right.
But the Europeans have sort of rolled out their own additional stimulus measures, and it has driven down the bond yields on the European bonds. So, for example, the German 10-year bond, the Bund, yields roughly 1%. So when you factor in inflation, real yield, that's a negative real yield. So it makes investors say, well, wait a minute, the 232 U.S. 10-year Treasury or whatever, let's call it 240, we've been around there for some time now, is not so bad in a relative attractiveness sense. And so my point is, it's a suppressing of yields by monetary authorities around the world, and so therefore it drives down all the bond yields. And of late, you've had the geopolitics has created a greater flight to safety in the bonds as well. Gaza, Ukraine, right? Those have been big issues. And the Ukrainian issue, very important for the Europeans. And if you don't think Europe is I personally think Europe's a very big story right now. If we want to have a good second half of the year in global equities, which would include the U.S., we really need the Europeans to join the party because the European equities have been weak. European stocks have been weak. They have deflationary forces. They tried to roll out some additional stimulus starting in June, but now they really need to deliver on the rest of it. So the European Central Bank has been able, Mike, to largely influence markets by its talk, by its rhetoric, by its communication, but it hasn't actually delivered on their own QE like the United States. And the Japanese have, and the Bank of England delivered on their own QE. So in other words, I think investors are getting tired. They're saying, what's all the talk? I need you to deliver. But it's never that easy because, remember, the Eurozone is 18 countries that share one common currency. So when the United States wants to do QE, we go and buy what? Treasuries. when the Japanese want to go and do QE, what do? They go buy Japanese government bonds. Well, the European Central Bank says, how do I do that? I can't buy 18 sovereign bonds, right? I need to figure out how to do it. So it's complex, and they're trying to figure out maybe I should buy loans, particularly real estate loans, mortgage loans, because there's not enough lending in the real economy. But the bottom line is the Europeans need to deliver their stimulus card here, or I think their economies continue to slip into recession. Italy already in recession. We got some very bad data from Germany and France. So what we need is the European Central Bank, I think, to actually deliver on some of its promises that will help stabilize the European economies, and then the recovery that's going on in the U.S. will not be the only game in town.
You're absolutely right. I said in my opening this morning that, you know, that Europe had been a disappointment, that Italy had slipped back into recession. But I think what shocked everybody, frankly, was Germany's GDP last week. I think it was 0.0. What should the investors look for in terms of, since they don't really have the same central bank operation that we do, so they don't have a Janet Yellen speaking from Jackson Hole like we will this week. And I know Mario Draghi, I guess, represents that same activity over there, and certainly he had a big impact several years ago when he said he would do whatever it takes. I think that that had a big impact worldwide. But is there something that you would be specifically looking for? Because, you know, generally over the last couple of years, everything I've read seems to say, okay, watch Germany, watch Germany, watch Germany. They're, you know, they're the strength of the ECB. You know, when we, particularly back in the times when we really were worried about Greece and Spain and Portugal and everybody else, everybody would say, okay, yeah, that's bad, but watch Germany, watch Germany. Well, I'm watching Germany now. It's not looking so good. So what should I be looking for?
You make a very important point. The European growth, let's call it the Eurozone growth, those that share the common currency, is essentially flat. There is no growth. And so, therefore, what should we be looking for? Well, as it relates to Germany, very closely tied, the German economy has got a lot of influence as it relates to Russia. And so the Europeans have wanted the Ukrainian situation to go away. It's the best thing. They want to sort of brush it under the rug for a variety of reasons. One, they have about 40% of the energy flows from Russia, right, to Western Europe through Ukraine. But it goes the other direction, too. The Europeans, particularly Germany, export a large amount of foodstuffs and other items to the Russian and their sort of sphere of influence. And so the German economy, you'll notice on any time when there is sort of a big spike in Ukrainian tension, the German stock market sells off. A lot of it is like this morning where it looks like they de-escalate, the German market rallies. So what would I watch? I would watch the Ukraine closely, and then I would watch Mr. Draghi to deliver on some QE. My last point on Europe, the Europeans are very good inside the five-yard line. Football analogy. They tend to do very good when it's sort of when their back is to the wall, right? They tend to be somewhat they flounder around. They can be very misguided. They can debate, but only when you actually sort of push them to the wall do they actually deliver.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
All right, now we're going to go back to our guest. Our guest today is Craig Columbus, Chief Market Strategist, Senior Managing Director of First Allied Asset Management. And Craig, let's move to the United States. What do you think about what's going on here? Janet Yellen, of course, is going to give a talk a little later on this week because they're going to be, meeting in Jackson Hole, which is not a bad gig. But there's been some thought here lately. Is she going to raise interest rates when? And I've heard everything from the last part of this year, which I think is highly unlikely, to Jack Ablin told us last week that he didn't know when they could raise interest rates. He didn't think that things were well enough to even consider discussing it yet. What are your thoughts on the interest rate situation and the U.S. markets?
I'm more in Jack's company, and Jack's a really knowledgeable guy. So the part of the biggest risk to U.S. equities was the notion that the Fed could raise rates earlier than this kind of stated time frame, which was the second quarter or the summer of next year. the idea that the U.S. economy, in the minds of some, was improving so quickly that they would pull forward a rate hike to, let's say, January of 2015. I'm like Jack. I don't see that. I think the U.S. economy is making some strides. You see it in the prelim GDP for the second quarter. You see it in the labor market, initial jobless claims down, some better 200,000 plus print a month for job growth. But I don't see enough dynamism that it would cause the Fed to pull the rate hike forward. So you ask me when, I think the second quarter, let's call it the summer of 2015.
Okay, so that's your prediction. We'll write you down for
that. That's my prediction.
All right, so now, there are several reasons to be, I guess, optimistic about what's going on out there. One is labor market growth may be muted, but it's growing. How do you see the
yes.
labor market?
Yes, I think there is some signs of improvement in the labor market, and it's been slow and steady, but that's okay. Mrs. Yellen, a couple of the favorite stats that she likes, one is called the quit ratio. So when it goes up, when it's showing the people are more likely to quit your job, it's a sign of confidence. You don't quit a job generally unless you're confident you can get another one. And she points to that. She says, hey, that's a sign of improvement. It's true. Another one would be the vacancy rate. She watches that a lot. In other words, the longer a job is open, when the vacancy rate is going up, that's a sign of labor market tightness, more competition. So I personally, if you were going to describe the labor market, I would simply say the supply of labor is essentially getting tighter and the demand for labor is going up. That's a good backdrop. Now, you still have the chronically underemployed, the part-timer, those that are underemployed, and those that, when you've been unemployed for too long, your skills atrophy and you have a hard time getting back in the job market. They call that the U6 labor force. But other than that, I think the labor market is one of the bright spots of the U.S. economy. Yes, I do.
All right. So, do you think this rise in the minimum wage, will that hurt business, or do you think that they'll eventually, it's much ado about nothing, and after they chat about it for a while and moan about it, that it will just absorb it and be on down the road?
I think there are some segments of the economy that are very sensitive to that. But all in all, the big issue around any wage hike, minimum wage or otherwise, is could that put wage inflation into the system? So right now you have wages growing at about 2%, which is equal to the rate of inflation, right? Only when you get above, let's call it 3.5% wage growth, which we do not have, does it become a problem. Why is it a problem? Because it affects profit margin. Right? Wages go up and you start to squeeze out the profit margin. I don't see that. And that's one of the reasons why I don't think there will be an earlier rate hike. Why, like Jack Album said, I think we'll be in the second half of next year, because I don't see the wage pressure building to the place that the Fed has to step in. So I don't think the minimum wage hike is a big issue for markets. Where I do think it is interesting, though, is I do think there is some inflation starting to build in the system. Not rip-roaring inflation, but it's one of the reasons why shows like this are important, because you're sort of thinking out into the future, because inflation has been essentially non-existent by the way the government measures it. But food inflation, healthcare inflation, energy inflation, those pressures are building. And then if wage pressure starts to sort of bubble up too, then you have to be a little bit more concerned about inflation than we've been in the past.
Yeah, because people are beginning to feel the pinch of real inflation. I know food's up, I think, in the last 12 months about 2.5%. Medical care is up 2.8%. Those numbers are beginning to have some impact on the consumer. Do you expect inflation is the concern they bring out every now and then? I guess you're looking for modest inflation for the foreseeable future.
That's right, but I will say that the food inflation has, I think, been a big story this year that has gotten not enough discussion. Energy is starting to back off as we sort of go through the cycle, seasonal cycle that we normally would. But I think food inflation, particularly looking at meat and coffee and milk and those kind of items, has been real. And the foodstuffs index is up 20-some percent year-to-date. And my point there is that I do think it's one of the reasons why I think the economy is not growing so quickly that it would require the Fed to raise rates earlier, because I think the consumer is getting squeezed in its consumption, and it's coming off a very low savings rate. So I think it's a real issue relating to personal consumption, and therefore I don't think the Fed would hike rates earlier.
Okay. All right. What sectors do you like as you look at the markets as a whole? If you were putting your own capital to work, what do you like in the marketplace? Do you like energy? Do you like healthcare? Are there areas that you – because it seems very hard now for as we look at the market to find an area that's really undervalued. And I'm not so sure there is any area that's undervalued. I think that it seems like the market is very fairly valued. In fact, I think that's probably the question I'd like to couch for you, is that do you see the market overall as fairly valued? And if there are any areas of opportunity, and I've managed to do this when we've only got 60 seconds to go, can I hold you over just a little bit longer? Do you have the time?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Yeah. All right. That would be great. Well, I tell you, when we come out on the other side of the break then, I'd like to know what your thoughts are, as whether or not you see the market as undervalued or fairly valued. And it's really hard now to look for the pockets where there's real, real opportunity. And I don't think anybody expects the opportunity, okay, I'm looking for a place where we're going to double my money. But we're just looking for places now where it is just not overvalued. So when we come back, we've got Craig Columbus. We're going to get the answer to those questions from him. He's a chief market strategist for First Allied Asset Management. So we're back in just a moment. Stay with us, folks.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
Okay, we have been fortunate today to have with us Mr. Craig Columbus. Craig is president, chief market strategist for First Allied Asset Management. Craig, just before the break we were talking, and I kind of had this long, convoluted question that I'll just very shorten. What do you think of the markets? Are they overvalued, undervalued? And are there any segments that if you were talking to your neighbor or your brother-in-law, you'd say, hey, these look like they still have maybe some opportunity in them?
Well, the valuation question is one we discuss every day. So in a relative valuation context, it's mostly the non-U.S., so Europe on a relative valuation, but we talked about the European economy. I think there's some relative valuation in emerging markets, since that's an area we've been focused on. But to answer your question about the U.S. specific, I would call the market fairly valued here, certainly. And look, we haven't had a 10% pullback in 2 years. So it's certainly not cheap, right? Bordering on expensive in some segments, the rest of the market sort of fairly valued, given how low interest rates are. Remember, a lot of how you think about valuation is relative to what? Relative to a 2.45 10-year treasury, that's not a great risk-reward from my perspective, right? You asked me about specific segments. Well, I mean, I would say technology is still one of our favorite ideas. On the big cap technology, I think U.S. financials, there's been a lot of repair of the balance sheet there. And then media would be one, too. Media is just where it is in the cycle. So media has been accelerating. They got a very favorable Supreme Court ruling on a case called Arrow. And then a lot of these the broadcasters benefited from that decision. And then the election cycle. We come up on a mid-year election cycle. You benefit from a spike in advertising. So I think technology, I think some financial energy, I think there's some value, relative value there, and in the media side. The one area that has really not done very well this year, consumer discretionary, is not an area that I like a lot because of the reasons we discussed earlier, because I think the healthcare, food, energy inflation takes a bite out of the consumer's wallet, and I think that's been part of the reason why we've had sort of a very tepid performance from that sector.
And would you stay away from bonds? I mean, it's interesting. I had a guy on last week. We were talking about whether or not the market was going to pull back, because everybody's always curious of when the next major pullback is going to be. And we were talking about whether or not the market was coming to an end, and he seemed to indicate, he said, I don't think it's come to an end yet, because what hasn't happened yet is interest rates haven't started going up. And when they start going up, all those folks that are in bonds are going to run out of the bond market, and they're probably going to run into the stock market. Is that a scenario that you would agree with or buy into?
I think that there will be a lot of sensitivity to a rising rate environment. I just don't think that rise is going to be all that quick for the reasons I said earlier. I don't think the U.S. economy is accelerating so fast. I do think on the bond side, let's separate government bond from, let's call it, the corporate high yield, et cetera. On the government bond side, as I said earlier, you have had so many forces, non-economic buyers, sovereigns, other governments, pension funds, banks having to hold higher capital requirements that have been, that those put a lid on sort of the, how quickly yields can rise. So I think, the risk reward on government bonds, not great, but whenever people sort of say, you know, I want no exposure to government bonds, I don't believe that. I think it's part of the core diversification and it's the ultimate flight to safety trade, because whenever there is a sort of flare up of geopolitics, et cetera, the one segment, the shock absorber you want in your portfolio is some government bonds. My keyword there being some government bonds, because there's nothing in the, that acts like a shock absorber the way that the Treasury market does. But look, it's a market that is very, very extended here. And it's one of the reasons why I'm so critical of the Fed in some ways, that you run the risk of creating a bubble in an asset class that is very, think about that, a Treasury bubble in our lifetime. How when has that ever happened, right? And it shows you that should be a flight to safety asset class. Now, do I think 242, 245 is the right level on the 10-year? No, because I think the U.S. economy is better than that. But I'm not one of those people that says, you know, look out 12 months and rates are going to be, you know, 4%. I just don't see that.
Yeah, there's some people out there, Dr. Lacey Hunt from Hoisington Asset Management, who are still predicting that the 10-year will drop below 2. Do you see anything that looks like that out there in the future?
I think it could. I think the U.S. economy is better than that. But the reality is there are so many uneconomic buyers, Mike. They buy regardless of price. That's why the Fed had to taper. It was buying too many bonds. Remember, the budget deficit has been going down. The Treasury has been issuing fewer bonds. So if the Fed was buying up so many of them, plus all these other sovereigns buying them up, plus pension funds. Remember, pension funds have had 5 great years in the stock market. So what do? You lock in your funding status, right? So you switch from stocks to bonds if you're a pension fund. And then finally, all these banks have to hold greater collateral or tier one ratio. They want their equity to be better, so they hold more sovereign bonds as well. And that puts a lid on it. So these folks that say, you know, that we could go lower on bond yields, I could see that scenario. I just don't think much lower, though. I don't think 2%. But I think there is a – I don't think there's a scenario by which rates explode higher.
Well, one of the shocking things to me, and I don't know how much time, I think we only have a couple minutes left, but Ben Bernanke made a speech the other day in which he said that he didn't think that and he's 60 years of age, so you got to assume he's going to live 30 years, that he didn't think in his lifetime that he would see the 10-year back to 6.5, which was the average during his lifetime as an investor. That is a surprise to me. Could we be sitting here at these low rates for decades like Japan?
Well, in the Japanese case, it was a whole different deflationary environment, and so therefore different catalyst. Do I think that rates were going to be in a lower rate environment longer than many people expect? I think the answer is yes. I think that the notion that that rates go or normalize faster, I think is a slim possibility. So, I think rates will eventually normalize, but we're going to be in a lower rate environment longer than most people expect. That would be the way I would describe it.
Okay. All right. So you think so it's going to be a while. So if you're looking for income right now, I guess that's what's driving the REIT market is the demand for income, and there doesn't seem to be a lot of opportunity out there. So
the search for yield is driving lots of markets, right? It's driving lots of markets.
And you don't see the interest rates moving up until next year sometime, if then.
I don't see the Fed funds rate. I don't see the Fed hiking rates until the middle of next year. Do I think rates could drift higher from where we are today? I do. I do think we could start to push the, let's call it the 280, maybe the 3%. Markets will look ahead. But I don't think there's going to be a Fed rate hike, and I don't think rates are going to move all that quickly from where we are today.
And you don't see a real painful crack up, I guess, in the markets. We've got less than a minute to go, but we just don't have the credit buildup. So if we get anything, it's likely to be a pullback, correct?
I don't think it's certainly not 2007, 2008, where banks were impaired. The financial system is not impaired in the United States. I could make an argument that some financials in Europe are impaired, but it's not the situation where you had double leverage. You know, there's people borrow to buy their house, then they borrow against it. That's not the condition we're in today. I think the balance sheet of the U.S. financial system is much better.
Well, that's good news. Hey, Craig, thank you so much for being with us today. Thank you very, very much. And, folks, thank you for listening. Tomorrow I'm going to have Brad Thomas with me, Intelligent REIT Investor. So for those of you that are investing in REITs, this is an independent source. I look forward to talking to you then. God bless, folks. Have a great day.
To be true, I find myself.
You have been listening to a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.